You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
This week on Dear Science, Christina was joined by AUT Professor Alan Blackman. This week, Alan and Christina discuss a chemical emitted by babies that can affect our behaviour, a spacecraft that can deflect an asteroid, and a brand new particle accelerator that can help us better understand atoms.
Morena, Alan. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, Christina. I hope you and yours are all well in these unusual times.
So the first topic this morning is fascinating, pheromones. So these are chemicals frequently used by insects for mating purposes, for example. Now, in humans, there is great commercial appeal for pheromones, like in perfumes, but there has generally been limited evidence of pheromones in actually affecting human behaviour until now.
Yeah, this is all very interesting, this. And as you say, the question is, do pheromones exist in humans? And again, as you said, it's well known that in the animal world and also in the insect world that there are such things as sex attractant molecules. And interestingly, the female Asian elephant has the same sex pheromone as around about 140 different species of moth. So it is very, very widespread amongst living things. Now, not only can pheromones be used as sex attractants, they can also be used to trigger aggression. And they can also be used in the opposite sense. Apparently, according to some studies, if a male sniffs human tears, it decreases their testosterone levels. There's something I didn't know until I started reading up about this. So, where are we going with this? Okay, so as I said, there's a big debate over human pheromones, whether humans emit molecules that can act as, for example, sex attractants or molecules of aggression or the opposite. So there's some workers now in Israel and Germany and Japan who this week have reported that a compound emitted by humans, and in particular babies, blocks aggression in men but triggers it in women, which is really quite interesting when you think about it. So this is a molecule called hexadecanal. In actual fact, it's quite a simple molecule. And interestingly, it's one of the most abundant compounds that are emitted from a baby's head. So these workers were interested to see whether or not exposure to hexadecanal would have any effect on humans. So how do they do this? Well, they get 127 willing participants. And what they did was they got them playing video games, which is what a lot of people seem to do these days in such sort of studies. So, in particular, the video game that these participants were playing was a two-player game where the players would play with each other in order to win money from this particular video game. Now, unknown to the people who were playing the game, they weren't playing with another human, they were playing with the computer. And the computer was then programmed, when it came to splitting the money, to not accept anything less than 90% for the computer. So that was the thing. They could win money out of this, but then they had to figure out a way of splitting it between them. And so every time they told the supposed other player that, you know, let's split it 50-50, they got a big red no on the screen. Let's split it 60-40, a big red no. Not until they got to 90% was the computer then programmed to say, yes, we'll split it that way, I'll take 90 and you can have 10. And then after that, the participant got a chance to send a very, very loud signal through their computer to their supposed co-player. And these signals were signified by emojis, which expressed various levels of pain. And so this is what was used to as a measure of aggression, just how loud the signal was that these players would then send to their supposed co-player. So that's the guts of it. And in terms of the results, what they found was very, very surprising. So while they were playing this video game, half of them were exposed to this molecule hexadecanal and the other half weren't. Now, hexadecanal doesn't have any smell, so they didn't know who or whether they were being exposed to it or not. And in fact, they masked it with something else as well, which had a smell, and so therefore they really weren't sure who was being exposed to this hexadecanal and who wasn't. What they found was that those people who were exposed to hexadecanal while they were playing this video game and then sending these loud signals, so the women were 19% more aggressive in the noise test, and the men were around about 19% less aggressive in the noise test, which is kind of interesting. And so just to back up these results, they then went and did some functional MRI, magnetic resonance imaging, and they were looking specifically at the brain and particular sections in the brain, the sections in the brain that control aggression. And what they found was that, yes, they could see these areas in the brain that when the women were exposed to this hexadecanal, they could see an increased aggression in the brain by 13%. And the men, they could see decreased aggression by 20%. So they saw a decrease in neural communication between the areas of the brain that controlled aggression in women, and they saw an increase in men. So the women were getting less control of their aggression, the men were getting more control of their aggression. And so what's the upshot of all of this? Why possibly is this the way that it is? And, you know, these two experiments look pretty definitive, especially the MRI results, so there's something going on here. And so what they have proposed is that mothers obviously will do anything to protect their babies, and so therefore you would expect perhaps that they would become more aggressive if they had to protect their babies, whereas sadly fathers are more likely to attack their offspring, and so therefore the smell emanating from the baby's head would then act to calm them down and make them less aggressive. So that is an extraordinarily interesting study, and I'm sure one that will begin a whole host of other studies into this sort of area. Quite fascinating stuff.
Now, kind of pivoting to things on a massive scale, basically Earth is in big trouble if an asteroid is on course to collide with us, but thankfully NASA is testing new technology that could hopefully be used to steer deadly asteroids away from Earth. So how does that work?
Well, very simply, and all that they're going to do is they're going to take a spacecraft and they're going to crash it into an asteroid. That's it. And in fact, that very spacecraft, which is called DART, is taking off later today from the States. And what they plan on doing is that this spacecraft is heading for a pair of little asteroids that orbit each other. And when we say little, we mean really quite little. So the actual asteroid that it's going to crash into is a thing called Dimorphos. And that is around about 160 meters in diameter. And so for those of you listening in Auckland, which is probably most of you, that's around about half the height of the Sky Tower. And the asteroid that it is orbiting about is called Didymos, and that's around about 780 meters wide. Okay? So what is going to happen is that the spacecraft is going to take off later on today, and it's going to make a rendezvous with this pair of asteroids in September next year. And at that stage, those asteroids are going to be around about 10 million kilometers away from the Earth. So what's going to happen is that DART is going to smash into Dimorphos, and it's going to be traveling at around about 7 kilometers per second when it does that, which is pretty quick. It's about roughly 25,000 kilometers an hour. And now you might imagine this is a small spacecraft smashing into something that's quite a decent size. And so what is proposed to happen when it smashes into it is that it should change the speed of the orbit. Okay, so this Didymos, Dimorphos going around Didymos, it should change the speed of the orbit, and it's only going to change it by maybe a fraction of a millimeter per second. Not very much at all, but that's all it needs. All it needs is just a tiny, tiny change in the orbital period, and that's going to make a massive change to the final trajectory of this particular asteroid. So And the reason that they chose this pair is that it's very, very easy to see how quickly these are orbiting each other from Earth. They can figure that out very, very straightforwardly. So, and again, as you mentioned at the start, the reason that they're doing this is, let's say, God forbid, one day a big old asteroid is heading for a collision with Earth. Would it be at all feasible that we can send up something there to try and change the trajectory of the object so that it misses the Earth? And I guess for some sort of scale, so if there was an asteroid around about 300 meters in diameter, if that hit the Earth, then you would get continent-wide destruction. This is an enormously powerful collision. If it was around about a kilometer wide, then you would be having global effects. And it's thought that the asteroid that collided with Earth, what was it, about 66 million years ago, something like that, was around about 10 kilometres in diameter. And we all know what happened there, no more dinosaurs. So these things don't have to be huge in order to wreak massive destruction. So it's probably a pretty good idea that NASA is spending $325 million here trying to figure out if they can change the trajectory of these earthbound objects.
Now, on to our final topic today. Researchers will soon be able to use a new particle accelerator to study atomic nuclei. So what can you tell us about that?
Okay, so yes, you're right, Christina. There's a new particle accelerator at Michigan State University. And this is called the Facility for Rare Isotope Beams, otherwise known as FRIB, because everything has to have an acronym. And what it does is that it's going to take these atoms, take some electrons off the atoms to form an ion, and then it's going to accelerate these ions up to around about half of the speed of light. And it does this with magnetic fields and stuff like that. Then when they're traveling about half the speed of light, it's going to collide them with a target of graphite, which is just good old carbon, and then it's going to analyze what comes off. So we talked about spacecraft smashing into asteroids. Now we're talking about ions smashing into carbon, graphite. Now what this does is that when this collision happens, you get big changes in the actual atoms themselves. So you get the loss of protons and neutrons from the nucleus, and that can cause the production of new isotopes. And now, what's an isotope? An isotope is a form of an atom that has got the same number of protons but different numbers of neutrons, okay? And so an example of that is carbon. Carbon has got three isotopes. We've got carbon-12, carbon-13, and carbon-14. And the latter you may have heard of because that's the isotope that allows us to use radiocarbon dating to date things like pieces of wood and stuff like that. Okay, so isotopes are of great interest to chemists. A lot of isotopes are known. There are a lot of isotopes out there that have yet to be made. And so what people are hoping is that this new particle accelerator is going to allow access to new, previously undiscovered isotopes. And we can then study those. And just through that study, we can then figure out more about matter, the stuff that makes up the universe. And we're going to get a greater understanding of the way that the universe works as a result of this. So this is pretty exciting stuff. They're looking at having this up and running in early 2022. It's already booked out, of course. There's going to be lots and lots of very, very interesting results coming out of this. So I guess this is another example of watch this space.
Sounds like there's some exciting stuff coming up.
Oh, there always is in science, Christina. Always is.
Good to know, and good for our segment and good for our listeners.
That was AUT Professor Alan Blackman speaking with Christina on this week's Dear Science.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.